Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
Happy New Year, 2026, and we're off and running. Sean, at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. Like and subscribe to Unpaved Sean Salisbury on YouTube. Adam Sager, Adam G. Sager on Twitter. Grateful to be along in 2026. Going to be an awesome month leading into an awesome year here in 2026 for a lot of different reasons for this show. Sags, great to have you on. Hope you had an awesome weekend, brother. We got, I'm telling you what, those college football games, they're like, some turned out like that. Alabama didn't show up. Looked like they were a Friday night football team. Got their ass handed to them. We'll go through it all, but just nothing like I think we expected. Competitive games until Ole Miss got into the fray and took care of Georgia. But we got a lot to talk about. Playoffs set in the NFL.
Ryan Day showed up against a U of M team and looked like Ryan Day had been playing Michigan the last 3 years. That's what their team looked like. They looked soft. They looked bad. And Julian Sand did not look good either. It was on everybody in that game.
He sure didn't. And the U took care of their business. And the thing that we'll discuss that stuck out to me too in that, even though his numbers were average, was it you said the University of Miami. You're talking about the Ohio State-Miami game, right?
Yeah.
Even though his numbers were fine, nothing alarming. Carson Beck gave me some respect when he ran through that first down when he took on a player. I think it was in the third quarter or fourth quarter.
Yep.
I thought what that does for the energy across your team matters, even though I think of the four we have left, Segs, I would say that Miami's quarterback play will have to improve to keep up with the other three that are really good. But we're in for a hell of a semifinal, and we'll get to that as well as the playoffs. So, Segs, just do my rant real quick so I get to JB. I'm going to make it simple. We don't do a lot of politics, and this really isn't politics. This is just safety. The fact that after almost three decades, the Venezuelan folks now have freedom and are going to have a life, and that there are certain people out there that say they care about people and turn around and are against this, you're a fucking stupid, okay? I don't care where you come from, where you're from. We just gave a country an opportunity to have a life and took a guy who's killing 300,000 people a year or so off the streets and stuck him and his wife in jail. And we got to go get the vice president too. For anybody in the, forget the politics, how we're not all on board with giving the Venezuelan folks a better chance at life, food, water, life, freedom. And they're crying in the streets. And we got people over here that once said, we don't want kings and we don't want dictators. And now are supporting a guy who's been a king or a dictator and has completely disintegrated the Venezuelan country when he didn't even get elected. He lost. And we get him out and he's in prison and saving lives. And we get people over here, the liberals, who are, and I don't have any problem with them usually, who are pissed at this.
I do.
Because you just don't like the guy who's the president. Stop it. They had a $25 million the bounty on his head before he got in. And they're mad that now that he's off the streets and Venezuela can actually live, we're mad at that and think, well, it's illegal. You guys are out of your motherfucking mind. And that's the only cussing I'm going to do here. I just don't get it. I really don't. I don't care who you voted for. I really don't care who you voted for. I'm past all the political stuff. What I am into is doing it right and giving people a chance of freedom. This is almost three decades, and they're crying in the streets and for happiness, and you're mad? you know what? You got to get a hobby or something. Let's get to JB right now. And I'm sure Sags, JB will have a lot to say about that too. JB, welcome in, man. The only place in the world where you can take a drug dealing nut job out of his country, out of power, and take him off the streets from killing people. And his own countrymen are, and folks, men and women and children are crying in the streets of happiness. And people are pissed that he's in jail. But we don't want a dictator, but now they support a dictator. I'm sure you got a lot to say on this, JB. I know we got limited time today, but I don't usually discuss much of this stuff because it bores me, because you're just not going to reach people that are just plain stupid and ignorant. Baffling. So let's start off there to get you fired up before we talk about all these coaching changes in the NFL. It's at the real coach _ JB, my guy. Happy New Year to you, brother. Great to have you on.
Happy New Year, man. Yeah, we don't like dictators here, man. This hypocrisy of the left and the Democrats, and I'm ashamed to be a Democrat when I grew up. My dad would be rolling over his grave. We all know it's no longer a Democratic Party. They're a cult. It's really clear as fuck. Listen, a buddy of mine who's a Democrat was like, JB, come on. A cult is led by a leader who wants to be a leader and be named a leader. And I said, really? So he was indicating Trump as that guy. I said, no, a cult is usually who hides behind someone like a woman, and then nobody knows who they are. That's a cult. And then there's a cult leader that nobody knows. Nobody knows who the cult leader of the Democratic Party is, John. Let's just be honest. And by the way, a woman who ran against Trump, Donald Trump, was that cult leader for a while. How's Oakland looking right now? Like, this is a mockery, man. And I'm so tired of this fucking Democratic demonic fucking plague. I'm going to be honest with you. They're a plague at this point. And for them to be protesting in Portland like a bunch of weirdos is a mockery to the American. Hey, guess what? Let me go back 8 months. Ukrainian flags flowing all over the goddamn country. Then I go back 7 months to a riot in L.A. about Mexican flags being flown. And then let me be clear here. So then we got Palestinian flags being flown. And
prayers
now
in the streets,
Venezuela. Now it's Venezuela. Well, let me ask something, John. When the fuck does the left put an American flag up? I'm so sick and tired of this fucking shit. I'm sorry to cuss on your show.
You know what a cult is, though?
They gotta get rid of this shit.
A cult is, you know, I'm with you. You know what else? Don't be sorry. A passion sometimes rears its head, and that's just life. You know what? You know what a cult is also? Is when your cult leader or leaders don't have the people's best interest in mind.
Or you don't have a leader.
That's exactly right. So yeah. There's a lot of definitions, but the fact is cult isn't good. And yet the same people who wanted him off the streets for $25 million are the same ones that are mad.
Yeah.
That he's now in jail. Well, I don't like the way he did it. Screw the way he did it. We're killing people every day. And you got their own country people crying in the streets of happiness. Can you imagine being freed from all that after almost three decades by a guy whose number one intention was to make your life horrific? Well, now in Brooklyn, in the jail he's sitting in, if you don't know what that is, that ain't no Martha Stewart Country Club, folks. That is sitting in a place where a handful of bad people have sit in while they've waited, and who knows how long he's going to be sitting in that jail, but he will never see the light of day of freedom again, and neither will his wife. And now you got to go get the vice president the same way, because she's about as evil a woman as there is on the planet right now. God bless you, and the Venezuelan women and men and children, God bless you that you finally can celebrate in the streets without somebody controlling your life in a way that made it miserable and scared you every day to get out of bed, if you even got any sleep.
I thought that they put a $25 million bounty on their head. The left did.
They did.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to put a $25 million bounty on the head for him to just go get it. One of the great military strategic moves we've ever had in this country. And here we are.
And so I'm going to be clear.
God bless you, man.
I'm going to be clear. I'm pro-American. Like, I could really,
me
to
too.
Be honest, and
not
I don't
want to
politics.
Pro-American. Yes.
Yeah. I could really give a shit less about any of these other countries. I really can. And I hate to say that to people that I have friends that I grew up with that are, you know, Venezuelan, Mexican, whatever. Bottom line is, those same people that I'm talking about that are American now feel the same way as I do. We came here for a goddamn reason, to get away from that. And now this is our country. I am pro-American. I know a lot of Hispanic friends of mine and other Asian Americans, Steve Kim and all, they'll fly American flag higher than they will anything else because they came here for a reason. If you don't like it, get the fuck out. I don't understand it.
Me either, JB. I'm all pro-American too, all day, every day. Support those who need it, obviously, but I'm also American. When you're in our country, this is our country. You do things that way. I do know this. America got better and safer with this move, and Venezuela people now have a life that they can move on, that they can move on from a life they didn't have. They didn't have any life at all other than the fact that they were barely breathing and eating and drinking and not just the poverty, but the way this dictator and this so-called leader ruled there. It's about time this happened. This is going to not only serve our country well, but the Venezuelan people who deserve this. And I'm going to tell you what, whether you're Mexico, Cuba, any of these other countries or South American countries, or anybody that's involved in the type of dealings he's in, they're coming for you. Marco Rubio's just getting started, dude. I'm just telling you.
And Sean, I got to be honest. I haven't seen a Venezuelan yet that is on the left side.
Unhappy? Right. That is unhappy with this? Agreed. So if it's good enough for their freedom, why is it not good enough for us? I just don't get it. But let's move on from that, JB, because we could spend your whole time doing that. A couple minutes real quick. Jonathan Gannon, Pete Carroll, Brian Daboll, Kevin Stefanski, Brian Callahan with Titans, and Raheem Morris in Atlanta, all fired. This is about the way it works between 6 and 8. Seems like every year that's 6 to 8. Mike Tomlin, some say safe, made the playoffs in a phenomenal game last night in a crazy ending. And then some are wondering about John Harbaugh. That would go to 7 or 8 of them, depending on how safe they are. So of all these, did anybody get jobbed here, or was it the right move to move on? And are we doing this way too quickly, or are we giving it enough time? And the Raiders, one and done for Pete.
Yeah, that was, to me, shocking. This seems more of a leadership failure in Vegas. Ever since they've been to Vegas, what is it, 5 coaches in 5, 7 years? What is it, 6 years, 5 coaches? Whatever it is, it's unacceptable. And the leadership
counting the interim coaches, I think that's exactly what it is, right?
You might as well kept AP if you're going to do this. Like, it makes zero sense to what my point. I think the job is Raheem Morris. I think if I'm Raheem Morris, I'm pissed off. We beat the Rams, who I think are going to win the Super Bowl still. You go on a 4-game win streak. You didn't want to start Penix. Your GM drafted Penix. You wanted to go with Kirk Cousins, who you offered $160 million to for a reason. You put him in, and you win the last 4 games as him as the starter. Guess what? You ended up with the same exact record as the other two teams in the division, and one of them made the playoffs through to a tiebreaker. If you would have started Kirk Cousins 2 weeks earlier, you'd probably be in the playoffs, Atlanta. And I think he got jobbed out of anybody. And the one that still has his job, Aaron Glenn, should have been fired weeks ago, because this is a team I watch more than anybody, Sean, because of a player of mine, Jermaine Johnson's on that team. It is the worst football coach team I've ever seen in my entire life.
You get a worse job, JB. Jets or the Raiders this year, coaching staff?
Jets, by far. At least the Raiders had a competent approach. At least the Raiders, I could tell, were being coached. The Raiders had a rhyme and a reason to everything they did. They just lack talent. The Raiders have a bad talent pool. They have 2 guys on that whole roster on offense, and they have 1 on defense. Let's be honest. And I got a kid on defense who got hurt, Lonnie Johnson, who just had to come back late and play the secondary after missing half the year. They are a bad, bad structured roster, and I would blow that up. I would blow the Raiders organization up. If you fire Pete, I would fire everybody. I would trade Max Crosby, let Max go get a team that possibly can get to a playoff and let him see a playoff berth, and blow this thing up and trade it and get number one. You already got the 1 pick. Go trade Max Crosby. Go get you a bunch of picks and blow this thing up. That's what you need to do right now. And then hire a coach who's at least, I don't know, 40 or so, a McVay type, and let him coach 6, 7 years. Let him have the reins. Put it in his contract. You're the coach for at least 5 years, unless it's a total debacle. Go build this thing up, because you are a joke at this point. And I don't know. The Raiders clearly had a rhyme or reason. Aaron Glenn, who I like as a human, I watched in Detroit as a D coordinator, and I said it in Detroit. The offense covered him up. The talent covered him up. He was horrific as a D coordinator. He's a DB guy. I learned a long time ago, don't ever hire DB guys as D coordinators. They don't know and don't understand. You can't run a defense from the back row moving forward. You have to start in the front and move back. He has no clue on how to fit the box. He has no clue who's the B-gap defender away from 3-by-1 to the field. And he has no safety insert. He's running C-gap defenders with no B-gap help. They're running gash inside zone against. I watch this team tremendously. They are the worst coached team. They were badly coached and unsound in Detroit. And this is a DB who played and coached defense, who is a head coach who couldn't even get an interception on defense. You should be fired. This is the worst coach team. And if you fired Gerard Mayo after 1 year in New England and now are seeing what Vrabel did in 1 year, if you're New York, you have to fire him and go get you a coach that's out there right now like a Vrabel. And there are several available right now that are offensive-minded guys that can come in there. But you got to get a quarterback in New York.
Would you move on from John Harbaugh?
I think John Harbaugh mutually will accept and move on. I think he's going to do an Andy Reid that he did in Philly. It's time to refresh, restart, get this thing started up in a fresh way. And there's opportunities
out there.
He'll
have a job in what, a day? He'll have a job in a day and a half?
Yeah. Raiders, Cleveland. I don't think he'd go to Cleveland, but I'm just saying he'd be highly sought after. And I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh's one and done if Mike Tomlin doesn't do the same.
Right. And Mike, those two guys both in the same division will be – we'll have work if they want it as quick as possible. And other jobs it may. I was going to say, what about Zach Taylor?
I don't know. I like Zach. I think the players like Zach. Agent McCarron's on my show every week. Played for Zach. He said they love Zach. Burrow wants to, he's probably fighting for Zach to stay. But you got to get a defense in an O-line or you're just barking up you're pissing up a rope. Like, I don't understand what they're doing. They paid $300 million to three guys, and you have nobody on defense. You have no O-line. You got rid of Mixon, your best pass-catching back, to Houston. I think that was mistake number one. I don't know how much more rope Zach's going to get, but since he's not known for firing guys, Marvin Lewis was there forever. They're just kind of like Pittsburgh as far as keeping their guys. I actually respect the ownership on keeping guys and allowing them to work through the kinks. I don't know how long Zach is. If he gets through this cycle, I don't know. I kind of put him in the boat, you know, year three for Gannon in Arizona, got the axe this morning, just like Stefanski. There's an offensive guy and a defensive guy who I'm sure will be coordinators in this cycle. I don't believe any of these guys, including Flores, will get a head job opportunity, even though I think they should. I think Flores is probably blackballed, just like John Gruden is. I mean, I'm being honest.
Let me give you one more. I know you got another meeting you got to get to. Who's the highest?
I got about 10 extra minutes. If you need me, I got about 10 minutes. I got a text.
Oh, okay. Well, then let me ask a couple questions. Who's the hottest non-head coaching commodity right now that would be, I mean, who becomes – let me start here. Of these coaches that we just talked about, who's going to be the first to get hired? The ones that are fired now, not about John Harbaugh or Tomlin, of these guys, Daboll, Carroll, Gannon, Stefanski, Callahan, and Morris, do any of them get new head coaching jobs of the six that are available right now?
Who's the best available?
Yeah, or do you think any of them get hired as a head coach? I mean, no. Does Stefanski end up in Philadelphia and they replace their offensive coordinator there? Does Matt Ryan get the GM job in Atlanta and find a way to find are any of these guys worthy of his gig, or if John Harbaugh comes available, they jump after him? I thought it was an indictment on that staff when Michael Penix on the offensive side said, I came to the sideline. He goes, I had nobody to turn to. Now, I don't know if that was hyperbolic or if it's true, then that's an indictment on a coaching staff where a quarterback's begging for somebody to talk to about game plans. But so none of these guys get a head coaching job. Then who is? Is it Joe Brady? Who's the hottest coaching assistant that's going to get a job through all this? That's a coordinator somewhere else, or maybe has been at, will John Gruden get a job? Who's available that they're going to hire?
I think John Gruden's realized he'll never coach in the NFL again. I think he's realized that. I think he's done. You know how it is. You don't mess with the hierarchy in this thing. Flores is the same way. I don't know. At least he has a job in the NFL. I don't know if they'll give him another job at the table, though. Cliff Kingsbury probably would be one, I would think, because it's a quarterback guy and in quarterback league and an offensive guy. Everyone's seen is what Ben Johnson's done with Caleb. I would assume they would think Cliff Kingsbury can do the same with somebody like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if Kingsbury got something. But if I'm MCDC in Detroit, I pick up the phone today and I call Charlie Weiss Jr. at Ole Miss or Stefanski, and I get them in there. I've heard sources say that Charlie Weiss Jr., who's a good friend of mine, may be the Giants' new offensive coordinator based on who the head coach is. He recruited Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, coached him, obviously. He's one of the hot young minds in football. Lane, I know, thinks he may be gone, whether he stays at Ole Miss or goes to the league. I could see that happening. I would go after a hot and young coming guy like him, just like Joe Brady got at LSU when they won the Natty. I think you go after a Charlie Weiss Jr. If not, you go after Stefanski right now. You got to call off the dogs, and you got to get it off your plate and become the CEO again like it was when you had Ben Johnson there. That's a big fall off. You saw it. Detroit still has the talent. Most offensive weapons, in my opinion, overall, with the backs, Montgomery and Gibbs. And then you got those wideouts, tight end. I mean, God dang. So it's either golf or it's the offensive coordinator. Which one is it? Because you got to go get an offensive coordinator. I don't believe in golf. That's why the Rams got rid of him and won a Super Bowl instantly. I'm not a believer, but he's still a top 10 ball spinner in the NFL, no question. I just don't think he has the it factor, and I think he's a deer in headlights when it matters most. I think you need to call that right now for Detroit. So I think one guy goes to Detroit as a coordinator right out the gate. Kingsbury's not leaving unless it's a head job, because he's not going to leave for another OC job in the NFL. So he's already an OC. And then Flores is going to be the question to me. I think he's the most attractive right now because he's been out of the head seat for a while. But are the good old boys going to allow him in, Sean? That is going to be the question. And I believe at least Flores will be the highest paid assistant next year. And he has that kind of dangling over the NFL because of what that defense has done and Minnesota doing what he did in Minnesota. I mean, come on, that team was riddled with injury, the most O-line shifts in football. So listen, I think it's going to be interesting.
At the real coach underscore JB on Twitter, you catch JB show every single morning, Monday through Friday. A couple more with Coach JB and Mike, to answer your question. Any college coach, head coaches grab an NFL head coaching job. Freeman would have been one. From Notre Dame, I don't see anybody else. And the truth is, with some of these guys, the Matt Campbell's getting locked up, you know, at Penn State.
I wouldn't be shocked if Ryan Day is not poached in the next cycle. After this year, he'll be poached. And Freeman, from what I've understood, Sean, you heard it here first, Freeman will be the head coach at Ohio State.
Once. He'll leave Notre Dame for Ohio State.
Yep.
That'll be the second guy who's had in Notre Dame to go to a job.
Ohio State's the most overrated program in America. They should never even made the playoff last year. They lost two games when they mattered most in the old format. They wouldn't even have made the playoff.
But then they kicked ass in the playoffs. So didn't that validate how good they are, JB?
They
boat raced everybody.
Yeah, but look at the draw they got. So the only team they beat was a rematch of Oregon, who they boat raced. Everybody else, look at what happened. Look how the playoff is. That's a whole other story. But this is the Ohio State, who I said, that's why I picked Miami to blow them out. I thought Miami would have beat them even worse if Beck would have hit a couple passes. It could have been 35-10. That game right there, Sean, is who Ohio State is. Played nobody all season. You scored 10 points against a Texas team who was mid at best this year when Arch Manning's first game, really, as a true starter. You struggle against them. You beat nobody the rest of the way. You get boat raced by Indiana when the only team you face at that point was Indiana. And then you get boat raced by Miami. That is who Ohio State is, in my opinion. That's who they are. They don't play nobody. The conference is a joke the way they schedule. I think this is who Ryan Day is. I don't know why Brian Hartline was on the sideline and didn't call it. If you're at the game on the sideline, then call it. Or go to South Florida. I didn't see how that made sense whatsoever. Day was not the OC. He hadn't called a play in 2 years. And you got Hartline on the sideline and you don't let him call it? I don't get it.
Yeah, and to Dan Lanning, Mike, I think Lanning would be somebody people would ask, but he's got too good a gig. They're in the – I mean, Why would I leave Oregon to go to a team to get fired in 3 years? Yeah, I don't think he's leaving that. Finally, JB, switch to the NFL real quick. Not counting the Rams, of the non-division winners, wildcard teams. Outside of my, I know your propensity to pick the Rams, you like them, and I get it. Who's got the best chance to win the whole thing that's a wild card round team?
In the NFC or everyone?
It's not the whole league. Who's the best chance to win the whole thing that is playing during the wild card round and it isn't a division winner? And you can't name the Rams, so that leaves you with a handful more.
I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna go with Houston.
What's that? Five more? Okay. You like their offense?
Go Houston.
A little more.
NFC wise, the Niners are done. The Niners are one and done. The Panthers have no shot.
Too many injuries. Yep.
Yeah. Green Bay is one and done. I think Chicago beats them, but then Chicago will face and get waxed. I think the Eagles made a mistake yesterday, though, by not taking a two seed. I truly do. I think that was a horrible mistake by Sirianni with this particular team. Pittsburgh's one and done. Jacksonville, I think, is good, but they're the winner, so they're going to sit there. Chargers with no 2-0 tackles, I don't believe can beat Vrabel in New England. So I think New England moves on. I think Buffalo got the worst draw besides Pittsburgh in this thing. I don't think Pittsburgh can score on the Texans, and I think the Texans can score on Pittsburgh. That's the difference there. I don't believe Buffalo. They have the best run offense in football with Cook, but they're playing the number one rush defense in Jacksonville. And when they shut down the run, you have zero weapons. Buffalo not getting a free agent wideout during the deadline was the most egregious thing in the trade deadline.
That didn't happen.
They ain't no weapons. They have no weapons, son. I don't know what Buffalo is going to do without any wideouts when you shut that run game down in Jacksonville, which they're going to do. I think Jacksonville is going to make a run here. That's my personal opinion because Trevor Lawrence is playing like the first overall pick should play. And the addition that they got from the Raiders and getting the wide receiver, who's now probably upped his ante and is going to get a big bag next year. Who is it? Bourne or whatever? Who is it? Who's the wideout they got?
Bourne's. Why are you telling me this?
Who's the wideout they got? Myers. Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, Jacoby Myers.
Jacoby Myers is the biggest.
I wanted to. So I was going to say Brissett, but he's too busy quarterback.
Jacoby Myers is the biggest addition that somebody could get right now. Just imagine Buffalo getting him.
Would have helped.
Buffalo dropped the ball. I think Buffalo's one and done. Pittsburgh's one and done. I thought whoever won last night's game was one and done. Ravens or Steelers.
The wild card's not your gig. Other than the Rams, you don't think the wild card's got much of a chance to win a team that didn't win a division that's not the Rams, you don't think has much of a chance to win in February.
I'm not sold on a guy that can't make layups, Sean. If you're going to sell me on the Bears, if you're going to try to sell me on the Bears, you know, the last 7 weeks, Caleb Williams has been horrific through three quarters every game. And then the fourth quarter, the magic gets turned on, and this guy's a baller, and they're winning games. Ben Johnson's done a hell of a job. But that's not going to work in the playoffs because you'll be behind too much.
The two biggest surprises in the NFL, and JB, I'll let you go, have both come from the AFC South. Not from the beginning of the year, but I'm talking about the way things were shaping up. Jacksonville didn't look like a tough-minded. The new coach comes in. Lawrence has been a Dow Joneser in his career. He's playing like the first pick of the draft. There's a sense of toughness, and they're getting physical with you, and they can run the football, and Lawrence is making some good decisions. They're explosive enough to score on you and keep you out of the end zone. And then the Texans, who were, 3-5 and left for dead.
Davis Mills
wins three, and now they've won nine in a row. Their defense, we always knew, was going to be great. And there's their offense is these young receivers from Iowa State and getting, you know, the way Nico Collins plays, the tight ends, Dalton Schultz has been more involved this year. And they've got marks. A lot of rookies are making an impact on the offensive side of the ball for Texans. So the two teams that damn could play in February with the weakness that is the AFC this year, maybe not name the Denver Broncos. I'm just telling you.
You're not shocked with Denver?
And the New England Patriots. What's that?
You're not shocked with Denver's the way they just keep winning?
I'm not. I think Bo Nix is better than people give him credit for because he's a two-dimensional player. Their defense is lights out. So I'm not shocked they won the division at all, because we went in with the three teams probably making the playoffs. Not shocked. I just think that the level of just the measurables of toughness, I didn't think that Jacksonville was going to have that. I've seen the movie too many times. Predict them high and they get their ass kicked. And the Texans, we thought going in were going to be great. Then they went through that lull. You're like, what the hell is wrong with them? Another rookie play caller, and they started to pick it up offensively, but their defense is going to keep them in every game. Shocked that Denver's been so dominant? Yeah. But shocked that they're in a position that they won the division? Not at all. And even though their schedule says they played an easy schedule, I'm just telling you, if you quit on New England's toughness and don't give them credit, we're making a huge mistake. We just are.
Sean,
that quarterback is real. They can play.
The problem is with Denver, if anybody other than the 12th man in Seattle has a true advantage, Denver is – I do not see anyone going in there and having their way. That is the most feared stadium right now in the playoffs remaining. Tough, you know that anybody. You want to play up there? No. You want to play up there in cold weather and that?
Already dealt with it. Had the best game of my career there. But you know what? I don't want a rematch. I've already had mine. So
hey,
I don't want any more.
MVP, Stafford?
It's heck, I could throw Nakua in it in the somewhere there. It's Stafford or what's his name should get votes, even though he's going to be defense player of the year. Miles Garrett, yeah. Congratulations, deserves votes, yeah. In the top five for what he did. But it's a two-horse race, and then the rest will fill in. It's between two cats. I know that you're going to get, you know, Jonathan Taylor had a really good year. We've seen McCaffrey have a good offensive, you know, player of the year type year, both of those guys. We've seen Nakua, who will probably end up being the offensive player of the year. But it's a two-horse race, then you'll fit in. I think it's probably going to go in this order. Stafford, Drake May, and Josh Allen, 1, 2, 3. That's who I think is going to go. I think that's going to be the order.
Yeah, just based on the schedule, the Rams have had the hardest schedule in football. They've won 12 games. You know, we could argue they choked off three of them. And could have 15, like, be honest, look at the wins they've had, losses they had, I mean. And what he's done against those particular teams. Remember, Stafford beat Houston, Jacksonville, a good Indy at the time, undefeated. Threw for damn near 480 against the best defense at the time in Seattle. Threw for 800 yards against Seattle, damn near, and 9 touchdowns in 2 games. What he did against a good Jacksonville defense, and then in Philly, big lead, they choked that game off as well, but he threw for 330 again. I don't know if anyone has the numbers against the competition. Now, New England,
he's going to play nobody.
Right? I hate to say they don't play nobody, Sean, because you played in the NFL. Everyone gets paid on the 1st and 15th. There is no such thing as you don't play nobody in the NFL. But the strength of schedule is a real thing. And New England, for Drake May, he's beat one team above 500. The Rams have beat 7. So that has to carry weight if it is a regular season award. That has to carry weight. Right. I don't know why.
Yeah, we're not even talking about just how gaudy Stafford's numbers are because, you know, Nakua, it's just, but they're gaudy. But I think that's the order. 1, 2, 3, the responsibility put on Josh Allen. Drake May's had a hell of a year, but I do believe Stafford wins it. There's 50 voters with the real MVP. It's going to be closer than we think, but I think Stafford wins it. JB, great stuff, brother.
Happy New Year.
Again, Happy New Year, and let's have a great, epic 2026, man. We'll talk to you at The Real Coach _JB on Twitter. Let's get to Adam Sager. Sags, welcome back in. Man, between coaches getting fired, the playoff games in high school, that too, college playoff, and with the NFL and the schedule set, it just goes to show you after the JB conversation to be thinking about it. We don't have a great team, but we got about 3 or 4 at the top that are going to be tough to beat. And that means Jacksonville, the Texans are playing great football. Denver Broncos, New England Patriots. We're going to find out if their schedule was going to hurt them or if fresh legs are going to help them. And then your Bears, even though in a loss, coming back down 16, looked like they were going to do it again, found their way to the 2 seed. But there's some really average teams or that are playing average football that are in this playoff right now. Pittsburgh being one of them, even though they pulled off a great win last night.
Yeah, if the Bears can start faster, they have a shot to beat anybody. But
no doubt.
He's right. JB's right. They haven't started fast except for that San Francisco game. Other than that, it's all been slow starts, and then they come back and win late. So that's something Ben Johnson's got to figure out. The thing I keep coming back to, and you guys talked about them, the Texans, that offense to me is just not good enough to win a Super Bowl. and to have to go on the road and face, you know, a Broncos team or, you know, whoever else they got to face. I know they get the Steelers round one, which is the nice thing. You know, that's just like you want to play the Panthers in the first round if you're in the NFC. So they get that Steelers game, which I think they can go there and win. But that offense, to me, is not good enough to continue on after that, because week in, week out, they just show that they just don't have it. C.J. Stroud doesn't have it for whatever reason. If you want to blame the play caller, the offensive line, whatever it is, this offense doesn't have the capability. Now, the defense will keep them close, but we've seen too many times that, you know, the Raiders game where they couldn't do it. It's just, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the Texans offense enough to give them a legit shot to win the Super Bowl.
My biggest concern about Texas is if they don't get out in front early and they're getting beat up, and then you can cut your defensive pass rush loose like a Denver Broncos team can. And then they're trying to play from behind, and I know they've done it, but then Stroud starts to play hero ball. You throw it to the other team. See, in the play in the regular season, you can beat teams that aren't very good by throwing a pick, and your defense gets you the short field. The other team's pretty good when it comes to the playoffs. They all are there for a reason, whether we think there's a great team or not. If the Texans' offense matches Stroud's rookie year, they'll be formidable in the postseason, because their defense is even better now than it's been the last 2 years, and they've been good both years. So defense will travel, but offensive line pressures and not moving the line of scrimmage or keeping the quarterback upright, even though they're a little better this year, that's going to be the thing that's going to that if they're going to go out, that's how they're going to go out.
Yeah, I mean, because do you trust that offense traveling to Denver to face that defense, which is damn near
I trust their defense to keep it close enough, but I don't trust – put it this way, and I go like this. Even as they say it, I actually like Denver's offense more than I like the Texans because of the dual threat that is Bo Nix.
For sure.
And listen, Sean Payton. One half does. Who's got great experience in big games and has won a Super Bowl. And then defensively, it's 6 1/2 dozen in the other, brother. One rushes the passer fiercely and will destroy you. The edge rushers in Houston and their full 11 are nasty and physical, and they can take over a game. And it's just – so it's going to come down to – and Aikman made a good point. It really – in games like this, single elimination games, like yesterday in certain teams and in the postseason, it's simple. The good defenses, offenses, which guy or which team going to lay it on the ground? You can't do – would say you can't bobble a snap, miss a handoff, lay it on the ground – and give up a fumble and somebody else come recover. I'm talking about around the league. You just can't you can't throw red zone picks. You can't kick three field goals and expect to beat Denver, because they're going to hold your ass. They may score one touchdown and kick a field goal, and that's a 10-9 loss. So you're going to have to protect the ball. But in the process of protecting the ball, you still got to take shots when they're there. And I'm going to tell you, I never would have thought it. I'll stand up and apologize. I didn't believe Jacksonville had this in them this year. And I'm going to tell you right now, the Jacksonville Jaguars can win the whole friggin' thing. If Lawrence plays like he's playing and their defense is physical and they've got enough run game to do it, they're pretty friggin' good, man. They really are. So kudos to them and those Jacksonville fans and that organization for – because at six games in, we had the Indianapolis Colts as a stone cold lock. The Indianapolis Colts are watching the playoffs. So there you go.
I know everybody and their mother has Kyle Shanahan winning coach of the year, but I mean, we got to talk about Liam Cohen and, in my opinion, not just being a Bears fan, but Ben Johnson.
Yeah, he's not even getting mentioned, because we're talking about Vrabel. We're talking about Shanahan. We're talking about a lot of other
Liam
guys.
Cohen is the guy.
Ben Johnson.
Of the year, in my opinion, what he's done, finally unlocking Trevor Lawrence into this guy that we all knew he could be. And I think there's – the nice thing is, there's still more in Trevor Lawrence that can get a lot better.
And,
it's kind of like Caleb Williams, same thing. Like, you see what they can do, but you're still kind of like, man, they're still – they may not be, but 60% of the way to what they could be. And that's kind of the scary thing for both of these teams looking forward. Like, man, we could legit have that guy. And if it's Liam Cohen who finally unlocked Trevor Lawrence into being the generational quarterback we all thought he could be coming out of Clemson, or – I mean, I remember, I think we might've been together watching the first time when he took that first throw at Clemson, and I'll never forget, it was, he was on the right hash and he threw to the left sideline about 25 yards and it was just a rope. And we just kind of looked at each other, or we texted each other and we're just like, did you see that? And that was as a true freshman. So, I mean, we all know it's there for him. And if Cohen continues to unlock it and they continue to play good defense like they have, they do have a legit shot to win it.
There's no doubt. And if it took this, you know, a little while for Lawrence to be that guy, the first pick of the draft type of player, sometimes guys aren't all on this. And he's had to deal with, what, three or four coaching changes, what, four or five coordinators, not to make excuses for him. But he stayed the course, and here they are. And I think they got a legitimate chance.
And if you're Jacksonville, real quick, thank your lucky stars that you weren't like the Browns or the Jets with Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield and or Geno Smith and these guys that went on somewhere else that were supposed to be these really good players. Maybe not Trevor Lawrence good, but supposed to be good high draft picks like they were. And they all went somewhere else and then found success. The Jags kept them. Kept him, paid him, and now he's finding success with Liam Cohen. So
there's no doubt to
them, and you think it can only get better.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal Ben Johnson's, you know, first year. Like I said, Liam Cohen's done a great job. Mike Vrabel's done a great job. I don't think Sean Payton's going to get as much credit as he probably deserves because they've got good players and a dominant defense. And usually we kind of, you know, well, he had good players. Kyle Shanahan's done a phenomenal job. It's one of the AFC coaches right now that are, hell, Mike McDonald in Seattle, phenomenal job, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a phenomenal job by him to have their sitting in the one seed position. So pretty impressive. We've had some good coaches at the top, and Liam Cohen's done a phenomenal job.
Real quick, before we get to the college football playoff and start reacting to that, your Raiders, fire Pete Carroll. Who's your first call? Who's the first guy if you, Sean Salisbury, is running the Raiders? Who do you want? Is it a coordinator like a Joe Brady, a Jesse Minter, a Brian Flores, a Jeff Hafley? Is it a big name? Are you waiting to see if John Harbaugh comes available? Because if that comes available, that's the immediate call. But
that's my first call. If okay, John Harbaugh gets
yes.
Move on mutually.
Any of those coordinators do anything for you?
Yeah, as a head coach?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, you know, Pete's had his run. I think guys like Brian Daboll, Kevin Stefanski, both should be employed as offensive coordinator. I think they're both really good in that position. I still think
Stefanski gets a gig somewhere.
I think Kevin Stefanski is going to be a head coach. I don't know where. Maybe out in Arizona. I do.
See.
Yeah, and hell, maybe Matt Ryan loves him enough to put him in Atlanta. Who the hell knows? Think quarterback, young quarterback, or a quarterback that needs a kick in the rear end, and maybe it's Kevin Stefanski. I think Raheem Morris is a really good defensive coach, and he did some good things this year as a head coach. All these guys will find work. The question is, I don't think Callahan, Pete Carroll, or Jonathan Gannon step into a head coaching role. I'm not really that interested in college coaches right now in the NFL, since a lot of them have already signed longer-term deals. I would say that if the guys come available, it would be the two in the North that are still employed. Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. So the reason why Harbaugh, Super Bowl experience, wins, has dealt with a lot of injuries, comes with a clean resume. He just maybe a change of scenery for a speech. I don't want an untested guy. I just don't. I love what happens, you know, what they're doing in Buffalo offensively, and you know, with Joe Brady, maybe you want to go, but with the Raiders need somebody to walk in the building and command immediate respect.
Yeah.
John Harbaugh does that. They have to have it. And a guy who's progressive enough and understands now the dual threat quarterback. They got the first pick, trade back Crosby, get two more first round picks. You jump in there and you have two or three of them this year and a couple, and then you can load because they're 10 players away from being 10 players away. John Harbaugh's seen the movie before, and I like anybody that's coached with Andy Reid. I'll take that.
Yeah, and they do have over $100 million in cap space. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a slow rebuild. You can move at a pace, even if you do get rid of a Max Crosby and get, you know, two first-round picks, one this year, one next year, whatever it is. So they've got some stuff that I think can really entice a guy like John Harbaugh moving forward if he were to leave Baltimore?
I like my guy. I think that our you know, JB was talking about our defensive coordinator in Minnesota.
Brian Flores.
And Brian Flores, his pressure, he will go in there and take names and kick ass. The thing in Miami got a little skewed. But if you want a guy to go in there with some fire in his belly, and I wonder how much Brady is going to have say in this as far as the full personnel decision with this move. But I don't want somebody with no head coaching experience, and I don't need somebody who's got 40 years of it. I don't know. Maybe he tries to recruit Belichick away. Hell, I don't know. But of those guys, you're going to win games if Tomlin or John Harbaugh are your head coach. Either one of them leave those two situations.
All right, let's jump to the college football playoff because these games did not go how we expected. Let's start with that Miami-Ohio State game we talked about to start the show. I mean, this was Miami coming out and just beating the shit out of Ohio State physicality-wise. I mean, Reuben Bain, I know a lot of people are talking about NFL draft and his short arms and everything, but if you watch Reuben Bain in that first half, especially against that Ohio State offensive line who has really good players on it, I mean, he looked like the best player in the country in that first half, and he was really good in the second half too, but man, that first half, he was wrecking that game. Mesidor, the other defensive end, was wrecking that game. And then Carson Beck and the running back, I'm going to blank on his name, for Miami, number four. They just kind of did what they had to do to win this game, and they got up, and you just saw it. I saw it from the beginning because this is the exact same way Michigan had beat them basically the last 3 years, especially the first year. And then last year when Michigan didn't have anybody on their team really good, when they beat them 13-10, that's how Michigan beat Ohio State. It's the same exact thing.
You're talking about, is it Fletcher?
Fletcher. Yep, okay. Yep.
Yeah, rushed for, I think, just under 100 yards, but had some big chunk plays. That game came down to the two things you couldn't let happen if you're Ohio State. You couldn't let their defensive front ruin the game, and they did. They wrecked it. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't let their offense do something, which they had, you know, them up and down running the football. They let Fletcher run for it. They dominated them at the line of scrimmage. They did it. And as good a finesse players as Ohio State is, they got pushed around. And they made enough plays offensively. And in truth, the pass rush and the pressure from the get-go affected Sam. It was a different offensive approach. Miami was more physical. And here we talked about Saiyan being able to make the boring play and doing it. Beck made enough plays, made the great play with his feet. And of the four teams left, he's going to have to even play better because it's not going to be as easy as it was against Ohio State. And even though the score said it, Miami was much more physical than Ohio State, and it showed. And that was the dominance. And if you go through all these games, you're going to get one thing, one common theme among every one of these games. Maybe sans the Ole Miss Georgia shootout, is that the team that was more body blow, physical, and tough, won. I mean, look at Texas Tech.
Yeah,
they got physically manhandled the game. Their offense looked scared from the opening snap.
The way they called it, looked scared.
Played not to lose, and they got their ass beat. They had done to them what Oregon did to them, what they did to BYU twice.
Yeah,
I'm talking about from the open. They walked out there and punched him right in the face. Said, "You got no shot." And you know what? At no time in that game did I feel like that Texas Tech made it a threat. They were, I mean, the best. These two teams together, when you combine offense and defense combined, were as good as any teams in the country when you combine them both statistically. Texas Tech looked like old Texas Tech. They got punished in the entire, every way, shape, and form. And then the quarterback, you know, obviously played a lot better from Oregon. So I switched to that game, Segs, but thing there is too. Their defense, Texas Tech had all the pub, and Oregon's had a hell of a defense all year long. Texas Tech's defense took a back seat because Oregon's defense mauled Texas Tech's offense. It was an embarrassment for Texas Tech, and we're not used to seeing that this year because I thought they could beat anybody, not that team I saw this past weekend.
Yeah, in Oregon, their offense did enough to win the game, but you feel like Oregon's offense has another gear. Now, Texas Tech's defense, obviously, what I think they were rated third in the country, fourth in the country coming into this game. But you know Oregon's offense has more. You know that Will Stein and company, who will be leaving for Kentucky. He has more with Dante Moore, those freshman running backs, that duo that is really, really good. And then the freshman wide receiver and Moore. I mean, they got a lot of talent offensively. The tight end, who's going to be a first-round draft pick. There's a ton of talent there in Oregon. Ole Miss, Georgia. Let me ask you this question. Are Chambliss, are Trinidad Chambliss and Kewon Lacy the best duo, offensive duo, left in the college football playoffs out of these four teams?
Better than Miami? Better than Oregon?
Than Indiana?
And Indiana.
I mean, I know Mendoza's really good, but he doesn't have, you know, that's just a sum of all parts there with that Indiana offense.
Oh, yeah. If you're just talking about the two guys, it's them.
It's that duo.
Impactful, freak showish. I'm going to tell you, and this is going to, you know, my affinity for Mendoza. Didn't have to throw much, efficient. And he came out, and what I loved about him in that game, sacked two times in the opening series, and I thought, ooh, Indiana's not used to this. They're going to get rattled. And those sons of bitches just decided to put down the gas and keep attacking. Cignetti knows how to coach, dude. I'm just telling you. No matter where he goes, they get tougher, culture changes, and they win. So the fact that Mendoza in that offense, because it would have been real easy in that football game to say, oh, man, Indiana, I know we'll get to. So that's one thing. Yeah, Lacy and Chambliss are. And there's a backup quarterback in Ole Miss that's pretty damn good that should be starting for some Division I school somewhere.
He's transferring. Well. I forgot where. Is it Mizzou maybe?
Probably.
He is transferring.
And I would too if I was him because it gets a sixth year. But I'm going to tell you about this. You know my feelings for the Mendoza? Moore is really good. Beck has his ups and down moments. I'm going to tell you right now that Trinidad Chambliss is as explosive a talent as there is at the position in this draft. I didn't say he'd be the first pick. I'm talking about the ability to kill you in more ways than one. And the dude's a shot taker, man. If he will fit it. I am so impressed. You should not. And I'm going in. I said, well, you lose all that. There's no way. I had Georgia winning six, you know. I said, there's a way because they're a good team, but with all the changes, how do they stay this focused and dial in? And I love Pete Golding. I just friggin' love it. I do. And the way he says, drop your balls and let's go play like we're capable of playing. And they sure did. And they gave Georgia's physicality, the physicality part of it, all they could handle. But it was the big plays at the right time with his arm and his legs that Chambliss played. If they win it, that dude right there is going to be the reason why, because if he plays like that, they're going to be in every one of them. They have that offense is explosive, and Pete's going to make sure their defense hangs in there. It's not going to get any easier, but their confidence has got to be through the roof right now with the way they won that game under duress. Impressive. Impressive.
Completely agree. I don't understand how we're at this point where we don't know if these coaches are going to stay coaching at Ole Miss. I mean, how is it not figure it out.
Finish the rest of the year and then move on. You just have to. You can't bail now.
Yeah.
I know you can't. You can't bail. I mean, I know Lane wants to get started and go, but listen, once you started letting them go, matter of fact, the NC2A should almost enforce this. Hey, we're going to borrow you for a game or two and then let you go, and it's the biggest nut cut. Hell, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I'm bummed I'm not there as part of it. Yes, it would. If four of them just decide, now we're headed to LSU. Thanks, guys. Good luck now. That's even such a bind you're putting Ole Miss in. I understand you took a job to move on, but to me, I don't know if owe it to him is the right way to put it, but there feels like an obligation to the kids to finish this out one way or the other. And I just do. And I
think the fact you started the playoffs.
Yes. Once you started it, you're all in. Right. It'd be so bush league and weakness.
Nothing, in my opinion.
Right. That's the way I feel too.
Nothing. You go to LSU. We're not letting you coach. We will take Charlie Weiss Jr. and Kevin Smith, the running backs coach. We'll take those guys back, and they can figure this out, and we'll try and go win.
My hunch tells me, too, there's a huge bonus. They already got one for making it to the Final Four for the game they won at $500,000, that there's a huge bonus for Lane Kiffin waiting on this. They would encourage him to go. Plus, it's just the right thing to do for the kids you – coached for years on there, that you've been right there coaching them up and getting them going. And yes, you're exactly right about Trinidad Chambliss. He should not be able to get a sixth year. You are 100% correct. He should finish this one out. and take his ass to the pros. I love the kid. He's been through it. He won national championships in a lesser division, did his thing, and now he's got them in position. It's not by chance. The kid is a winner. But to keep giving these guys more and more years, it's time. Take it. You can put it this way. His ability and his how we feel about him ain't going to get any higher. Because I'm telling you right now, the chances they're back in the Final Four next year aren't exactly – it's just – it's hard to do. So to go and get after it would be him. I don't like the fact that he may get a sixth year. I just don't. I don't like that. Go and move on. Finish this one out, and you don't need a sixth year. There's a place for you on Sundays because the kid's a friggin' playmaking, football-playing Jesse. We'll see how it turns out. And then the final
Real quick, you mentioned it. Indiana just beat the shit out of Alabama. Like, it was never a game. It was never, like you said, those two sacks in the first series, and you're kind of like, okay, let's see.
Here we go.
But
I thought Alabama would compete.
Boom. It was just Indiana came right back and just punched them in the face and never stopped punching until Alabama gave up and took Ty Simpson out of the game.
This was such a one-sided game, it wouldn't have mattered if Ty Simpson would have finished. Indiana dominated every friggin' phase outside the first series. This was never in doubt. They threw it better. They ran it better. They tackled better. They coached better. I'm probably missing something along my 30 years in broadcasting and covering football and sports. I cannot remember a time in a game of this magnitude that I watched Alabama look like a team that had zero business being in this position. That was, you talk about playing hard, do it all. When they got down, it almost felt like Indiana was yawning their way to a dominant victory. Texas Tech and Alabama, for all they've done this year and the competitiveness, I was shocked at the lack of physicality and, I don't know, being in the game for both of them in this situation. I like Tech better than I did Alabama, but it's Alabama, and we expect it to be Indiana. Well, you know what it looked like? It looked like Alabama was Indiana 7 years ago, and it looked like Indiana's Alabama when Saban was there. That's who it looked like. They took on different personalities, and it showed. And if you don't think Indiana can win the whole thing, and I know they're number one, but I still think some still aren't going to give them the credit they deserve, and they're going to get tested. But I haven't seen anybody play better. I can tell you that this year, consistently. I have not seen anybody play consistently better than them all year long.
Yep. All right, before we get out of here, we'll do our bet of the day. Sean, Friday night, our two schools faced off on the hardwood. Michigan, USC. I was telling you before the show, I almost took USC plus the points because it was like 22.5. You know, USC is
like
a top 25
team. Right?
I've watched them multiple times this year, and I know they were missing a couple pieces, but – you know, with Baker Mazzara, that kid is really good, and he's fun to watch. I thought they could keep it close up in Ann Arbor. Nope. Just another 30-point win for the Wolverines. So that leads us to our bet of the day. Your Trojans.
I'll say one thing about this, though. My Trojans aren't capable of winning the whole thing in college basketball this year. No. Your Michigan Wolverines are. Yeah. They are capable of doing that. They're going to have opportunity.
Runaway favorites right now. They're like plus 150, and the next person's like plus 850, the next team. So
it's impressive what they're doing.
Bet of the day, your Trojans on this little road trip. They travel up to East Lansing to face Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans. Sparty's a 10.5-point favorite with a 150.5 over under. I'll tell you right now, hammer that over.
Hammer.
I mean, college games are flying.
170. Past. It's 170, 180 points in a game, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Segs, go ahead.
I think this will be a better game than we saw Friday night. 10.5 is damn near right about where I'd expect it. Give me the Spartans at home to cover the 10.5. Barely.
I'm taking the over, and I'm taking the Trojans. I think Michigan State wins, but I'm taking the Trojans because in my – now, games like happen to Michigan and you're on the road can carry over for weeks if you let it.
Especially when you're on a road trip in college.
That's what I mean. Tough. Right. And then so we're going to find out how mentally tough they are, and I think they are. But you were embarrassed so bad by Michigan. I'm talking about you're a top 25 team, and they dismantled you like you were an NAIA team trying to compete with the big boys. They play good sports at NAIA, but I'm just saying that I would imagine they'll respond with a little more toughness. This game stays closer than double digits. Michigan State wins, but it's closer, and it's a late second half game, but give me the over as well in this football game. In this basketball game.
I want a good game to watch tonight, so, and that's the game I've already set my timer or my reminder for, so I can sit and watch that game tonight. All right, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks to Coach JB for joining us, giving us his big Venezuela take, which I think we all agree with here on this show. Just the fact the way that was handled was amazing. The fact that they were in and out in 6 minutes from when they landed to getting him in out.
How in the world can you be an American and be bummed at this?
We know why.
I do know why. I'm trying to cut him some slack. I just can't. You can't be any dumber. You cannot be any dumber than to root against people having, well, it's the way they went about it. You got a criminal who murders people on a daily basis off the streets, and you're giving people freedom is what you're giving them. And we've turned this into, this is the epitome. This is the poster child for exactly what you're dealing with of, it doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter if everybody they handed everybody $1 billion, they'd be pissed they didn't get $1.1 billion on that side. Well, yep. What do you mean? Oh, you can't do that. Oh, well, we don't want to do any more Fed, no more taxes. Why? Then they turn around and bitch why they're getting taxed. It's just like this. I don't want a dictator, yet you're rooting for a dictator. We got a criminal arrested and freed a country, and people are pissed. And you know why? One reason, because they don't like the guy who did it, period. Has nothing to do with policy, has nothing to do with anything. And I don't care whether you like him or not. I don't give a fuzzy rat's ass whether you like him or not. If you're an American, or if you live here, or if you're not American and you're another country that's going through stuff that Venezuela's gone through, you're standing in the streets crying, cheering happiness. And I just can't fathom it. And so, yeah, I'm right about this. So is JB. Who's wrong are the idiots who are mad that this happened. And we didn't even have to pay $25 million for the bounty on the head because our own military took care of it.
The one of Venezuela's neighbors better be paying attention, because that president is talking out his ass too. And Colombia is about
to. I got news for you. And that ain't the only one.
The replays.
Be on watch. We got if you think this is the end, oh no, this is the beginning of this drug stuff. Okay. But again, as I said at the top of the show, to the Venezuelan people, God bless you. I can't imagine what it'd be like after 30 to be in a place where you had no control over anything. And even when you try to control it with a vote, you voted the person in and didn't get that person because of this awful human being and his wife, and the vice president's just as bad. If you cut off the head of the snake, two heads grow back. And this vice president is an awful human being that she's next. Yep. She is next.
All right. Well, that'll do it. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey, as always, behind the scenes, making the show look and sound great every single day. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Get all the notifications for when we go live. We'll be back tomorrow talking more NFL playoffs, talking more college football as we get you ready for these games. We got a fun weekend, Sean. We got Thursday night college football playoff, Friday night college football playoff, Saturday NFL playoffs, Sunday NFL playoffs, Monday night NFL playoffs. So we got 5 days of really good football up ahead. And this rivals, this coming weekend of football rivals that NCAA weekend where those first two rounds where it's just games from 11 a.m. to 11 at night. And it's one of the fun weekends that we get.
It's supposed to be. So 100% with you.
We will get you ready for it, to enjoy it, to learn all about it. We'll be talking about it. We'll be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.